indie rock sounds of Little Fevers, led by Lucy Michelle of the Velvet Lapels, plus local Bemidji musicians Cage Jamber, Sonny Johnson, and Tiny Town. The Beltrami Block Party all day Saturday in Bemidji. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at kaxc.org.
We'll have local news coming up next with the Up North Report.
You can hear the set list every single week here on 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids, 90.5 KPXC Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us, KAXC.org.
Still some fog out there, mostly cloudy for our day, then becoming sunny with a chance of sprinkles. High is 74 to 77. Mostly clear tonight, temperatures in the upper 40s to low 50s. And for tomorrow, highs in the mid to upper 70s. Things getting more summery as we go. Upper 70s to low 80s by Saturday. Partly sunny skies and evening temperatures in the upper 50s to mid 60s.
And if you are jonesing for some real summer weather next week, it's going to be warm, like in the upper 80s.
Are you?
Kind of.
Okay.
I'm ready to like want to jump in the lake and then stay warm after I get out.
Yeah.
Because that hasn't happened yet.
It's a good feeling. Coming up at 9 o'clock today, it is Headwaters, and your host is DJ Dang. For our volunteer-hosted programs on the river today, we've got Judy Gruey at 1 o'clock, DJ Ben Franklinstein at 7.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Where the city of Virginia placed $3.7 million of sales tax funds is raising tensions among city leaders. Iron Range Today reports the council has directed staff to complete a request for proposal for a forensic audit. The audit would track down how the sales tax money went into the general fund and was apparently spent without council approval. The city is already navigating a precarious financial situation. It has $77 million in long-term debt and could be out of money by the fall. In recent months, the council has implemented a non-essential spending freeze. Virginia spends more than $1 million a month on payroll, according to city records, and staffing makes up about 75% of its operating budget. According to Iron Range Today, the council considered an idea to outsource and restructure its public safety services, but ultimately did not act during its meeting on Tuesday night. A packed room of residents spoke in favor of the departments. Councilors declined a motion to seek requests for proposals on the ambulance service, and similar motions on police and fire were not called. The city of Fauston and Essentia Health must resume talks in their years-long dispute over the healthcare provider's operation of the local hospital. In an order filed Saturday, a Polk County District Judge required the parties to take part in arbitration over whether the city has the right to end Essentia's involvement. Judge Jeffrey Remick says the court is required to order arbitration based on state law and a clear and unambiguous agreement between the entities. Fauston city leaders have maintained that services at Essentia Health declined in the last several years, notably with the end of labor and delivery services at the hospital in 2022. The Fauston City Council agreed to remove Essentia as the operator of the Critical Access Hospital at the beginning of this year. Essentia has accused city leaders of misrepresenting basic facts of the agreement and misleading the people of Fauston. The provider has argued another round of arbitration was not necessary, saying the city was refusing to accept a previous ruling. Fauston has maintained that providing labor and delivery was an essential part of its agreement. Arbitrators ruled in a split decision in 2024, however, that Essentia did not breach its contract. The agreement with Essentia has been in place for 17 years. The provider broke ground on a $12 million emergency room expansion in April. Early voting for the August primary election begins Friday, but another round of candidate filings will open soon, including for the soon-to-be new Northern Minnesota city of, well, Northern Minnesota. Here's Larissa Donovan with an update.
Candidate filing for the first ever Northern City Council will open July 14th. Northern Township successfully petitioned to become its own city, which became official earlier this year by order of an administrative law judge. The process was contentious at times, with the judge also considering a counter petition from Northern's nearest neighbor, the city of Bemidji.
Everything is on track for us to seat the first council and new mayor at the general election here in November. And then shortly after that is when we officially become a city. This is basically the first meeting where they take their oaths of office. And we'll just continue on as we are today, just with a new title.
That was Northern Township Administrator Chris Lane. A large piece of Northern's push to become a new city involved addressing aging septic systems around Lake Bemidji and moving toward wastewater infrastructure, which Lane says is set to begin construction in 2027, with some utility work underway this summer. Many local units of government, like school boards and cities that don't host primary elections, will also begin candidate filing periods on July 14th. Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
Aerial management for the invasive insect called the spongy moth is set to begin in a couple of weeks in northeast Minnesota. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture, in collaboration with federal partners, has identified 16 areas in Aiken, Carlton, Pine, and St. Louis counties. The Ag Department says spongy moth has caused billions of dollars in property damage and defoliated millions of acres of forest. A pheromone that stops male moths from finding females will be applied by low-flying aircraft to the tree canopies. The flyovers are scheduled for July 13th through 15th and may last through the 17th, depending on the weather. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Thanks for tuning in. That's the Up North Report. It is also available as a podcast. You can go to kexe.org or the usual podcast platforms you use. Also, while you're there, sign up for the Season Watch podcast.
Yeah, what are you guys talking about this week?
Well, I think you came in and said this one day, and I didn't fully embrace it, and I just want to apologize to you. We saw a bear at our house. It was so thrilling. We've been having a lot of issues with various critters around our place. We got a fox that's circling our house. Mm-hmm. We got the bear, but we had one of the cool things I talk about in there is we're waiting for the jumpers. So our nephew, who stayed with us last summer for about a month, he and Tom put together a wood duck house.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a mama that there's some babies in there. And we found this article that kind of explains, like, when the mama starts making a certain noise, they just jump out of the hole. It's time for them to jump out. And so I was doing weed whacking. We made a path down to the lake so that the jumpers can. God. So excited to watch this.
So have you seen them yet?
No.
Okay.
No,
but you just know they're in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 'Cause the way that she's acting towards the, and it's so interesting to see. Yeah. So anyway, it's just. Everything's sort of on fire. I mean, that's what Jeff Sundin was saying, too, is like, this is the heat with the solstice. This is where it's peak summer fishing time right now. Mm. And I don't know if you heard, but he made the big announcement, which he said is not that big. A forward-facing sonar. He finally got it, but it was a business.
That's a big announcement from Jeff.
It was a business decision because he was having people not want to be in a boat.
Oh, that is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And he's using, you know, and his point always, and we're going to take that conversation up next week again, but this is still humans.
Yeah.
You may see the fish in a better way, but doesn't mean you're going to know how to get them. And you still need to, you know, if you're catch and release, you need like ethics of how you're treating the fish in the lake. And it's like, this is not just a blanket completely changed the face of fishing.
But it is a big deal for Jeff to embrace this.
Yeah.
And I'll be curious, like a month down the road, what his thoughts are after, applying it on the fish, on the guides.
Right.
That'll be really interesting.
Yeah. So also talking about, the business of guides, if they get sponsorships and all this stuff. And so he made the decision to not, because he could get one for free. If he's sponsored by them, and they're pretty expensive. And he just said he didn't want to do that because he didn't want to be beholden to a certain company.
Yep.
Which is interesting too. I don't think a lot of people realize that about fishing guides and how the business of all of it works. And makes, I mean, makes sense for them to be able to pay, make a living and everything.
Right.
But yeah, there's always a lot more to it. So if you miss that, the early bird fishing guide every Thursday morning at 6:20, we don't talk about it much, but we do have an archive on our website where you can catch like the last week's programming. You just choose the day and the time and mm-hmm. you can find some programming that you might have missed. We don't have the capacity to get every single thing you hear on the air on our website as a story.
So. No, so that's a good way to do that. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, a nature question. We have been noticing, we've got our family cabin north of Grand Rapids. We have been noticing a lot of loons this year.
Mm.
I'm just wondering if other lakes are seeing this too. We've got a couple parents and a baby right in front of our cabin. They were everywhere the other night when we were out, and we're seeing babies all over, which wow. feels like a boom. A bit.
I had the experience of sitting, and they were a ways away from me, and it looked more like ducks or geese to me. But then when they started making the sound and then they do that, it was like they were drag racing. Do you know what I mean? It was like there was a group of like five or six of them. It's like, you know, they're doing this thing. And then the crazy, I mean, loons always have that little bit crazy sound. But when they're in the drag race mode, it's like, woo, they're just going. I'm like, well, those are not geese. You know, I'm not always good at that for sure. Yeah. But I don't see that often where there's a bigger group of them and their stuff is going on. You know, it's a lot of times one, two or three of them together. And we've got a couple families of geese that are hanging out together. So we saw them as little babies. Boy, they grow fast, but they're hanging out on our shoreline. But it was like 14, you know, but then there was multiple adults. And yeah. I guess that, you know, that happens. And
right. It takes a village, even for animals.
But now it just looks like they're all adults because they've grown up so much. And it's like, what are you doing all? It's quite a gang you got here.
My cousins one time were visiting from Colorado and the loons were calling. It was late at night. We were on the bonfire. And my cousin Scott looked at me and he was like, what is that? And I was like, what? It's a loon.
Yeah.
But he had never, they don't have them in Colorado. And right. I also heard from my friend in Texas, I've maybe said this on the air, that she said they don't call when they're down south.
Okay.
They don't have the same call and their feathers change colors too.
Okay. Maybe so they got to save their pipes.
They save everything for us.
Yeah.
Aren't we
Thank
lucky?
You, loons.
Right.
We've got a barred owl across the way.
So. Oh, I just heard an owl last night in town.
Who cooks for you?
Yes. Yeah. There were two of them calling to each other late at night last night. It was, I don't usually hear that in town.
Yeah. And I'm hearing a lot of the green frogs. The way that Charlie remembers that is it sounds like an untuned banjo.
Okay.
Yeah. And I remember that because remember Kermit the Frog, Rainbow Connection?
Yeah.
Green. Kermit's green. It's a green frog.
Okay. See. A little bit of a leap there, but yes.
Sorry. Muppet Show was instrumental into my life. So, and Rainbow Connection.
But did he play the banjo?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. You're right. But his little legs hanging out over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's he also rode a bike, which was amazing.
Really amazing. Hey, we were talking about community events, and that's our question of the week is like, what's an annual event or what's a parade or a just something happening in a small town community, small festival, whatever that is a do not miss for you. Chelsea texted and said she would lose her local card if she didn't mention Beanhole Days.
Mm-hmm.
July 14th and 15th this year. No mystery here. It sounds it's exactly what it sounds like. Giant pots of beans are buried in fire holes to cook overnight and are raised the next day. Everyone lines up for their cup of beans. The cast iron kettles have names. Sven, Lena, Oli, Big Bertha, and Baby Olga, and a king and queen bean are crowned. I was once out of state and overheard someone talking about Beanhole Days.
You don't know about Beanhole Days?
Never in my life I've heard about this.
Really? Because we've announced it.
I'm sure we have. Yeah. But I think maybe I've heard of Beanhole Days, but I guess I didn't realize it was actually...
They were burying the beans.
Yeah. What's the deal with the burying in fire holes? So that's just how it cooks.
Yeah. And I'm sure they're probably judging all the named things.
And I'm guessing it's based in traditional, this was like a traditional way to cook beans.
Pequot Lakers did. Yeah, that's maybe what happens. I don't know.
Okay.
I also wanted our friend Carolyn King, hopefully she's listening because she likes anything with bean in it. I hope she's gone to that.
Right. I feel like she probably should.
Mm-hmm. I've always loved the idea of that one because I love kind of the odd thing. I don't like beans though. So just, I don't know.
You don't?
No, not like that.
Are we talking just like straight baked beans or any kind of bean you're not a fan of?
Oh, baked beans is what I don't like this.
Is this what we're talking about here? Is it mostly
I guess
baked
I don't
beans?
Know. Okay. If it's other, I would probably eat other. I shouldn't judge. You know, sometimes you have those childhood
Well, maybe you
things.
Could be a judge at Bean Hole Days.
I think Chelsea's more up to that task.
Okay. All right. You can text in your community events, 218-326-1234. Support on KAXE comes from Lady Sippers NA Bottle Shop, located in downtown Deer River, offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info available at ladysippers.com.
We're going to take a listen now to our Elma of the Week. It is Tift Merritt. It's her 7th album and the first one she's put out since 2017. Sugar is the name of the album, and she says it's about the surprising sweetness of being unequipped for showing up every day, but trying anyway.
A lot of people missed it, but it was on the news today. Heaven's gone on hiatus. All the rules have changed. It's a last-ditch ultimatum. Stuck with all your sin. Till everybody's going, nobody's getting in. The gates are locked, the choir's quiet. There's no more back door sneaking in. Jesus got so tired of begging. He's not coming back. This is his last-ditch ultimatum. Now we're stuck with all our sin. Till everybody's going, nobody's getting in. With the drag queens and the orphans, sweet.
Tift Merritt. The new album is called Sugar, and I was just telling Heidi I had the chance to see her perform in Nashville last fall at a Justin Townes Earl tribute, and her voice in person is in the same wheelhouse as Amanda Shires in that, and Courtney Marie Andrews in that. As soon as you hear it in person, it's like one of those, no matter what you're doing, you're just kind of like, your eyes are just immediately drawn to the stage and like, whoa, who is singing?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just a little bit of a taste there. Last Ditch Ultimatum.
Such an interesting name. Tift.
Tift Merritt. Yeah. I know. I don't know that I know any other Tifts.
Mm-mm. Hey, coming up.
Tifts.
We're gonna.
That's kind of hard to say.
We're gonna be hearing about, you know, some of the things that nature ends up doing. We're gonna hear about these earthquakes in Venezuela, and then we've got our reporter Larissa Donovan joining us. It's been almost exactly a year since the derecho, and still lasting effects of that. Lasting effects emotionally for the folks in the Bemidji, Cass Lake area. So we'll check in with Larissa. Not only was she reporting on it, but she went through it herself and had a lot of stuff to do. So we'll be talking about that throughout this before we get to 8 o'clock this morning.
We receive support from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities, working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org.
Temperatures are warming up a bit. We're seeing 53 in Hibbing, 57 in Brainerd and Grand Rapids, 54 in Bagley and Bemidji at 56. Still a little bit of fog out there, so take precaution. Is that the way to say
sure.
it?
Sure.
But, you know, it makes things can jump out when there's
especially
a lot of fog.
Especially when you're driving through boggy areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just be careful.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C.
And Amy Martinez in Los Angeles, California. Venezuela was hit by what seems to be two powerful earthquakes on Wednesday. They are among the largest in its history. The capital, Caracas, is one of the worst affected areas. In sound from this verified video, you can hear a resident screaming in terror as their apartment sways violently from side to side.
The tremors, measuring magnitude 7.2 and 7.5, struck just 39 seconds apart, bringing down buildings and severely damaging the international airport, which has now been closed. More than 20 aftershocks have followed. The government has declared a state of emergency amid fears of significant casualties.
Reporter John Otis joins us from neighboring Colombia. John, do we have any updates at all on the extent of the damage and on casualties?
Well, there's still a lot of confusion over just how much devastation was caused by these back-to-back earthquakes. Their epicenter was west of Caracas, but that's a very densely populated area with some big industrial cities like Valencia and Barquisimeto. From photos and videos, the damage looks quite extensive. You can see huge clouds of dust rising into the sky over collapsed buildings and rescue workers pulling survivors out of the rubble on stretchers. People were ducking for cover under tables at restaurants and dashing out of their homes into the streets. Venezuela's acting president, Delcy Rodriguez, said at least 32 people were killed and 700 injured. And she said dozens of buildings collapsed in La Guaira, which is a town near the capital. Yesterday was a public holiday in Venezuela, so rather than at work, many people were at their homes when the quake struck. Now, models put together by the U.S. Geological Survey project that in earthquakes this strong, there could be thousands of casualties. That said, we don't have total numbers at this point, but people are already posting on social media looking for missing loved ones.
Okay, so what's been the response of the Venezuelan government?
President Rodriguez spoke to the nation last night. She declared a state of emergency. She canceled public schools, and she called on doctors and nurses to immediately report to work. Let's listen.
El primer mensaje para nuestro pueblo es mantener la unión para salvar vidas.
And she's saying, my main message to our people is to show solidarity. And she goes on to say that her entire government has been mobilized and that the number one task right now is saving lives.
Okay, what's been the response from the international community?
President Rodriguez says she's received calls from the U.S., Mexico, Colombia, and many other countries offering to help. President Trump has said on social media that he's ordered U.S. agencies to prepare to move quickly. The U.S. State Department says it's mobilized a disaster assistance team and task force to Venezuela. It will also be sending search and rescue teams, medical and humanitarian supplies. It helps that the Rodriguez government's been working closely with Washington ever since the country's authoritarian leader, Nicolas Maduro, was ousted by U.S. Special Forces back in January. And the U.S. Embassy has also reopened, so that should help. But remember, under the Maduro regime, Venezuela's economy collapsed due to corruption, mismanagement, and U.S. sanctions. Today, there's triple-digit inflation, the health system's in shambles, and firefighters and rescue workers lack equipment. So it's going to be tough for Venezuela to try to recover from this natural disaster.
That's John Otis, who is reporting from neighboring Colombia. John, thank you.
Thanks very much.
We wanted to spend a few minutes on the science behind those earthquakes in Venezuela, so we've called earthquake scientist Judith Hubbard. She's a visiting professor with Cornell University. Good morning, Professor. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Michelle.
So the U.S. Geological Survey, as John just told us, is telling us that these were two earthquakes, measuring them as magnitude 7.2 and 7.5 within a minute of each other. Now, this may seem like hair-splitting, given the loss of life that we're already seeing, but are you convinced that this is two large back-to-back quakes? And if so, how common is something like this?
So back-to-back earthquakes can occur. They're certainly in the geological record. They've happened within the last decade. I don't know for sure that I would call this two earthquakes. I think we're going to need to see more science come out. A magnitude 7.2 earthquake like the first one would take about 30 or 40 seconds to finish. So whether you define a break between that one and the next one is a little unclear to me. I think for people in the area, they would have felt this as one very large earthquake. That's what I'm seeing from people's reports.
And what do we expect in terms of aftershocks?
Well, we know that large earthquakes produce quite a lot of aftershocks. There's an aftershock forecast from the USGS right now. Typically, we would see, you know, at least one aftershock of about magnitude 6.5, but there is a chance that there could be larger aftershocks, including possibly, although the probability is quite low, of earthquakes even larger than the magnitude 7.5 in the coming days to months.
Wow. So based on the data that you've studied and you're familiar with, what are we looking at in terms of loss of life and property damage because of this?
One of the things that you have to know about an earthquake this big is that you see it on a map as a point. This was not a point. It was an earthquake that ruptured a fault that's probably 100, 150 kilometers long. And what that means is there's a lot of people who live quite close to that fault, which probably is just north of the coast. The last night, it was a little unclear what the rupture looked like. This morning, we're seeing models that show a rupture that starts west of Caracas and moves east towards Caracas, getting quite close. So it seems like there's a lot of areas in that high-intensity shaking zone.
Hmm. So as we've been reporting that this is, whether this is one event or two events, we're reporting that this is one of the most serious in Venezuela's history. Is this region particularly vulnerable to earthquakes, and if so, why?
Yes, this is actually a plate boundary. It's right between the South American plate and the Caribbean plate. The Caribbean plate's moving about 20 millimeters east every year, which may sound like a small amount, just 2 centimeters. It's about an inch, but it adds up. And that movement is accommodated irregularly as earthquakes. The fault's going to build up the strain, and then they slip all at once. So this earthquake would have released a lot of that strain. We don't yet know how much slip occurred in it, but I would guess a few meters. What that means is that if you saw the fault line, you'd see things actually move, you know, offset by a few meters from before the earthquake to afterwards.
Hmm. Okay, now forgive me if this is a dumb question, okay? But there was also a magnitude 7.2 earthquake off the coast of northern Japan about half an hour after the Venezuela quakes. Is it possible that the two were related?
You know, usually I would say it's impossible that one magnitude 7 in one part of the country can't possibly be related to a magnitude 7 on the other side of the world. I still think it's very unlikely. But the reality is that the shaking waves from the earthquake in Venezuela would have reached Japan before the second earthquake, or the earthquake there, started. So it is technically possible, and there is a term for that. It's called dynamic triggering. That being said, I think it's very unlikely because the area that produced this about magnitude 7 earthquake in Japan had a magnitude 7.5 just last December. Mm-hmm. So it's still in the aftershock period.
And earlier in the day, Wednesday, a 5.6 earthquake hit Northern California. So how often do we see days with this kind of seismic activity?
This is high seismic activity, obviously, because it was magnitude 7.5 in Venezuela. You have to think about why you're paying attention to these earthquakes. If there had been that earthquake in Japan, or especially that earthquake in California on a regular day, nobody would have really blinked. Hmm. And if the earthquake in California had occurred somewhere else, nobody would have blinked. There's magnitude 5.6s all the time. So it's high, but that's mostly because of the large earthquake in Venezuela.
And because there are people there.
And because there's people. That's right. A lot of earthquakes go totally unnoticed because they happen in the middle of the ocean or in a desert area with no people. But obviously that's not the case here.
Thanks so much for this. That's Judith Hubbard, visiting professor at Cornell and co-creator and writer for the Earthquake Insights Substack. Professor Hubbard, thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
The artificial intelligence investment boom has sparked some stock market jitters. It's been a volatile few weeks, with investors seeming to swing back and forth between optimism about AI and pessimism about a bubble. But they all seem to like what they saw in the latest earnings report from a company that's close to it all. Here's NPR tech correspondent John Ruich.
Micron Technology is the U.S.'s biggest maker of memory chips. These are not the cutting-edge processing chips used to train AI models, but they work in tandem and are equally indispensable to data centers. With hundreds of billions of dollars flowing into AI, demand for memory chips has skyrocketed. The companies that make these chips can't make enough, and chip prices have surged too. The 1-2 punch of insatiable demand and sky-high prices pushed Micron's quarterly profits up nearly 15-fold. In after-hours trading last night, its stock price, already up more than 700% in the past 12 months, jumped to new highs.
As of today, there's no slowing down the compute demands out there.
CJ Muse is a senior managing director at Cantor Fitzgerald, focused on semiconductors. He says Micron's results show that demand across the chip sector is still booming.
We're in the early innings of AI. Agentic AI is only driving increased demand, and TSMC wafers, DRAM, NAND, substrates just can't keep up.
To decode that chip world alphabet soup, TSMC is a legendary Taiwanese chip maker whose production lines are booked solid. DRAM and NAND are crucial types of computer memory for AI, and substrates are the stuff that chips are made of. Other memory chip makers are killing it too. Over the past 12 months, shares in South Korea's SK Hynix are up more than 800%. And the California-based company SanDisk has seen its share price climb some 4,000%. Companies, including Micron, are scrambling to build new factories to expand supply, but that takes time. And on Wednesday afternoon, Micron CEO Sanjay Mehrotra told analysts on an earnings call that the challenge of meeting demand will not go away anytime soon.
Even in 2028, when supply begins to improve gradually, we see that the demand will continue to be on a robust trajectory as well.
And that, he says, is because this whole AI thing is a very long-term trend. John Ruich, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
Morning edition here on People Powered, KAXE. Thanks for being here today. I'm Heidi Holton.
I'm Kari Hedlund. We receive support on KAXE from Grand Rapids area freethinkers supporting the constitutional principle of separation of church and state and promoting secular thinking. Grand Rapids area freethinkers hosting meetings, social activities, and community service projects since 2012. More information on the Grand Rapids Free Thought Facebook page or by email at grafmn24@gmail.com.
Mostly cloudy today, becoming sunny with a chance of sprinkles, high 74 to 77. Tonight, expect upper 40s to low 50s. Lots of things going on in our region. That is our question of the week. We want to know what some of your favorite things are, maybe the little sneaky trails we should know about in your area. There is the big bio blitz going on at the Sac-Zim Bog on Saturday. It's their 14th annual, and you help them identify some of the biodiversity in the bog. And there are so many different things.
So nearly 4,100 species have been recorded there. That's wild.
Yeah. And then 77th annual Paul Bunyan Days in Akeley. That begins tomorrow and goes through the 28th. Live music, activities all weekend, classic car show 10 to 2, and grand parade at 1 p.m. on Sunday.
Also coming up this Saturday, the Minnesota Historical Society is offering free admission to all of its sites on Saturday only. Northern Minnesota sites include Split Rock Lighthouse on the North Shore and the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids. You can find a full list of the sites and operating hours at mnhs.org/visit.
And we want to remind you that you are invited to join us at Beltrami Block Party, downtown Bemidji. It is on Saturday, begins at 1 o'clock. Free live music, Eric Koskinen and David Huckfeldt, Little Fevers, and a lot more. There's also food and beverages, and it's family friendly with the Headwater Science Center there. Bubbles, you said?
Bubble Station. Wow. And also just a note, bring a chair if you want to sit down and listen to some live music. Bring a camp chair or any sort of, you know, sitting device.
Sure. Are there other sitting devices?
I don't know.
Okay.
You know?
Bring a stump? I don't know. Sure.
You know, honestly, I've seen people do that with like a walking, not a walking stick, that would hurt, a cane.
Yeah.
Where it's got a little bit of a bump out.
That's a John Latimer's got that thing, mm-hmm. and people always think he has a cane, but it's actually his little chair that he carries around.
You know what? I kind of think we should bring canes back. I was rummage sailing with a couple friends one day, and my friend Therese found this amazing wooden cane, and it felt like she was born to walk with a cane, but just in a very cool way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were trying to convince her to buy the cane.
And that didn't work?
I think she did, actually. I should double check with her. But it was like, God, that's kind of awesome. And it's like, honestly, very helpful.
Yeah. And I sort of didn't, like, Tom will take a big, he's got some stick that he gets, and it's got a story. Like, I always sort of make fun of it. And he just told me the other day, oh, no, I got that when I lived in Ohio, when I was walking with Joe, you know, like this whole thing. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. But we were on some trails. We were up on the North Shore, like in Grand Portage, doing some trails last year. And I had kind of twisted my knee, so I actually needed something like that. And boy, that was helpful.
Why would you judge that?
I don't know.
I know.
What's wrong? I guess we're getting older, Kari. Oh my gosh. Stop judging canes. That's
I'm just
what we
saying,
have to
let's,
say.
Let's, you know, all ages can use a cane. Obviously they can. But like, you know.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back.
It's somehow reminding me of like you could twirl it and you could, you know.
Sure.
You could wear a top hat too.
Yeah.
I mean,
you could make it a whole thing if you want.
Yeah.
Therese could pull that off.
I'm thinking of what actor am I thinking of that will show up on Jimmy Fallon and all of a sudden just break into dancing?
Oh, Sam.
Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell. Love him.
He did one time. He came out with a cane and he was limping like something was wrong. And all of a sudden he just twisted it.
He does
it.
The fancy footwork.
Yeah. Super fun.
Love him. We've got best wishes coming up. First, want to thank Ledger and Ladle for their support, a restaurant in downtown Grand Rapids with a rotating menu every few months to explore a new region, technique, or ingredient. Open Wednesday through Friday, 3 to 9, Saturdays, 5 to 9, and Sundays, 10 to 2. More at ledgerandladle.com.
Coming up at 8:10, Aaron Brown joins us. We're talking about some of the cool things that happen this time of year on the Iron Range, including he's on his way to Gilbert today to interview a polka musician.
Ooh.
Is it Steve Sokol?
I don't know.
I know. We'll find out.
We'll have to ask. We receive support from the Veterans Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County. This crisis intervention service is a program of first call for help 211 and provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to veterans and their families who are in crisis. Trained providers are available to serve fellow veterans 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 211.
And thanks to Bonner Eye Clinic, locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
It is time now for Best Wishes, where we wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday or happy anniversary for today, June 25th. Dan and Barb Haug celebrating 43 years of marriage from Bemidji. Happy anniversary, guys.
Steve Waller from Breezy Point, happy day to you.
And Fisher Jamber getting a birthday in from Bemidji. Is that Cage's sibling?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mike Wheeler, happy 76th to you from Brainerd.
And Lauren Anderson turning 73 from Aiken.
And Scott Rusty Bucket Kesty from Reamer. Scott, happy birthday to you.
If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234.
Nice.
I woke up singing that song this morning, so I figured it was an appropriate birthday anniversary song. I got you.
I'm glad you chose that because I woke up singing Suddenly Seymour.
Suddenly Seymour. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I love that play.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, we could also do that. Or we could just sing
it's
it
in my
if you
algorithm
want.
Now. And so I'm seeing a lot of different performances of Suddenly Seymour. So.
It's now going to be in all of our algorithms, you realize, mm-hmm. by mm-hmm. saying this. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's I Got You by Tedeschi Trucks Band. Happy anniversary. Happy birthday to you all. Coming up in just a moment, we are talking with Larissa Donovan, getting our KAXC News update. And this time it's more of a look back, actually, on the derecho in Bemidji 1 year ago. We received support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. More online at hottubsmn.com.
Time for John Latimer, our daily dose of phenology.
On today's date, June 25th, 1986, I see my first smooth sumac in bloom. We have two types of sumac that grow commonly in Minnesota. Smooth sumac, which has a nice smooth bark, and staghorn sumac, which has a very fuzzy, furry bark. And the reason for the name staghorn is that it much resembles an antler at its velvet stage. If you think of a deer's antler and covered with velvet, and then think of sumac covered in that same sort of velvet, it is staghorn sumac. Both the staghorn and the smooth sumac are pretty similar. They both grow from rhizomes, so they tend to grow in clumps. They have lovely multiple leaflet type leaves and a big column of red berries that shows at the top of the plant late in the summer and early fall. The other thing about them is in the fall, they both turn a brilliant scarlet red, which makes them really lovely plants to have around. One thing that I need to make clear to you, and I have talked to a number of people about this, and that is there is no poison sumac in Minnesota. It just doesn't grow in our state. If it did, it would have white berries. So if you're looking at a sumac and it has red berries, chances are it's staghorn or smooth. It shouldn't be poison sumac unless somebody has planted it here, and that wouldn't be a good thing to do because it is an irritant, much the way poison ivy is.
You can catch John Latimer's phenology report. He really went in depth on moths and butterflies this week. It's available at kaxc.org.
There's a dead moth right next to me, actually.
He probably brought it in.
Probably, actually. We have a bunch of milkweeds in our backyard. Mm. I have been seeing little baby caterpillars all over those milkweeds. So fun to see.
You know how you've been to our raspberry patch mm-hmm. before? It is so, there is, does cacophony get overused? I don't know.
But I do not. Absolutely not.
Oh, in my, it doesn't get in my word, enough. I say it all the time. Maybe Larissa Donovan does as well, but there's a cacophony of buzz. There are so many bumblebees in there right now. Like I just kind of stick my head in. It's it's just lovely. I'm so excited for raspberry season. I think it's going to be good. Last year was not.
Okay.
It was troubling.
Does it tend to, I mean, I'm sure it's weather dependent, water dependent, all that stuff.
I've been watering them, so that probably helps a little bit. I don't know if we did last year, so.
Okay.
There you go. Do you use the word cacophony? Larissa Donovan, our Bemidji reporter, joins us now.
You know, it hasn't really come up.
Well, that's a shame.
I guess a cacophony of news would not be appropriate.
That is not ideal.
Yes. And be quiet, Heidi, right? That's what you're telling me. I don't want a cacophony.
No, I can't handle that right now. It's busy time of year.
I almost hate to have this conversation with you, Larissa, to make you kind of think back to what it was like a year ago. Let's talk first, like personally. You know, you live right in downtown Bemidji.
I do. Yeah. So the rain came in through the bedroom window and woke me up. So it like blew open one of my windows that like I think I had like a little catio door in it. And the wind came in and just blew that thing right in. And I remember fighting that hurricane wind and trying to close that window. But still, my house was full of debris the next day. But I fared for, like, compared to some of even my neighbors, I fared pretty well. I lost a few shingles. My fence that was already leaning came down completely. But, you know, around town, we still have, like, trees leaning on houses and tarps on some folks' roofs. Like, getting, finding available contractors has been getting on the lists of all the folks in town and all the folks who are offering to do the work in town.
Mm-hmm.
And navigating those challenges of, you know, finding legitimate contractors and all that.
Back to the experience in the storm, Larissa, did it truly feel like hurricane winds?
It did. Yeah, it sounded like a freight train. And usually that would excite me, right? But hey, not at this time.
A cacophony of train sounds. Okay.
Yeah, right. So, that may have been a cacophony. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So it was a derecho. Can you talk a little bit about the storms and how many trees were lost and all of that?
Yeah. So it's been likened to a once in a century wind event. Yeah, not just for the Bemidji area, but perhaps even for the whole state of Minnesota. Well, in well over a century. In some analysis earlier this spring, like April 2026, Beltrami County Emergency Management, using some data from homeowners who reported various structural damages, they asked that suggests that we had wind speeds of over 100 up to 130 miles an hour. At the airport, like initially reported, like we had a recorded wind gust of 106, but like damage assessments from National Weather Service and the emergency management in the days that followed, just due to how the trees splayed themselves on the ground, and it was like 9 million at least that fell in this storm. But that suggested 120 miles an hour. So that's a hurricane strength wind, and a derecho is a land hurricane. So, you know, we don't have ocean currents contributing to our, well, maybe we do in a far off place, but where all these fronts collide here in the Midwest, that's where the moodiest skies are, it seems.
So since then, there have been those, about a month back, there were the seedlings that were, was that like a million seedlings, or I can't remember the number?
I think thousands of seedlings and hundreds of tree planting projects have been underway. And actually, the cool guys at Beltrami GIS, the map dudes, they are encouraging people like, hey, when you plant a tree, let us know. And so we can plot it on our map. So, you know, as the years go on, they have this tool to, you know, make sure the tree's progressing as it was. Because, you know, all these trees we lost, most of us aren't going to see, you know, their grandeur again in our lifetime. I don't know if y'all have been to Bemidji since the storm hit, but, you know, it's stark how different it is. Like, you drive down Lake Avenue and, you know, I used to take my girl to daycare down that way. I used to go down to daycare that way, and it was a consistently a thick forested area. And it's just, you know, even though I should be used to it, right?
A year later, it's still not normal.
Yeah. And it's just sparse. You can see the houses that were behind there that, you know, may have existed, but you never knew. But now you see them.
What's the general feel of folks who lived through this, of now storms coming in and, you know,
as the weather alerts come in, you know, I think, you know, people are a little heightened response. You know, a lot of people are still dealing with their insurance company from the last storm's damage and navigating through all the challenges of that. That reminds me, I should submit my last receipts.
Well, right. And I've like the emotional tax that's on that as well. I mean, I've seen some posts of friends in the Bemidji area when a storm is coming, of just like, whoops, stealing myself, or trying not to freak out, trying not to like go back to last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the tornado sirens, I get a little heightened because I sometimes, like, when the air conditioner's on, I feel like I hear them behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turn it off and it's just a regular siren.
How about, did your daughter wake up to all that noise and wind, and how did she react?
She was out of town with her dad. So she wasn't, but, you know, she came back a couple days. We already had power back on by that point when her dad dropped her off with me. But, you know, the day camp I signed her up for the week was decimated by the storm as well. So, you know, when Governor Walz came into town and I was tracking him through town, I had my little girl with me and she was just sitting in the grass while I was, you know, lobbing questions at public officials.
Wow.
You know, just how it's done.
Yeah, no kidding. Lost my train of thought here I would love to hear from folks today as you're listening to this conversation. Let us know how that storm impacted you, how you've been feeling. You can text 218-326-1234.
And at the United Way of Bemidji area, they've been doing a lot of work. You know, they're even like a support group for people who are, you know, still feeling the stresses of dealing, of navigating through this disaster. And, you know, they're still helping people who may need, you know, some repairs, and they're still seeking some volunteers who could help with a little chainsaw work, doing a little roof repair or other, you know, smaller jobs like that.
So, Larissa, you're very involved in the community. So when the derecho happened, it was the weekend of the Loop the Lake. So obviously that couldn't happen. That was canceled. You are involved in kind of the 4th of July and lots of things there. How did you guys respond to all of that? And how are you thinking of this year?
Yeah. Well, we last year when the storm hit, we were supposed to put up our giant waterfront tent like in the next couple of days, but you know, there was trees everywhere and like we weren't certain of the power. So we ultimately opted not to put up our tent last year. And we divided our events that we were going to have in the tent to other establishments in town who graciously stepped up to help us on such short notice. It was really remarkable how the whole community really came together to make, like, and, you know, our grand parade route, which usually runs almost all of from the old high school grounds on 15th Street all the way down Beltrami Avenue to downtown, then going back all the way up on Minnesota Avenue. But, you know, that was a very hard hit area. Folks on Minnesota, in some parts of Minnesota Avenue, it took almost a whole week to get power back. Hmm. And they were just like I've gone on walks and it's remarkable. Like, oh, this used to be kind of shady at midday, but
yeah.
But we had to adapt our parade route. We were able to, you know, fit in a lot of carnival even with all of that. But you know, just last night we put the tent back up, and as the skies were looking kind of dark, those poles that we used to put up the circus tent are just giant lightning rods. So you don't want to be near it when the storms are happening, for sure. But yeah, it was, we're doing the best we can, just moving forward. And I'll be talking more a little bit about the Water Carnival specifically when I'm on the morning show with Andrew next week. But
okay. we were going to ask about that. Okay.
Sounds great. Anything else what you've been reporting on this week?
Well, I am working on finalizing my impacts of incarceration project that I've been kind of nose to the grindstone. So if you haven't been hearing a lot of my stories, I've just been working on that.
Yeah.
There's about to be a new city of Northern Minnesota Northern Minnesota.
It's a fish.
they announced they are doing candidate filings later in mid-July, July 14th, where a lot of non-primary local governments will have their candidate filing periods.
Have we talked about this? Have they discussed how difficult it will be for the internet to find them?
I think it'll be great for their algorithms, actually.
We just got it.
I did ask because, you know, I went to school for marketing. That's what I, but then I realized too late that I don't really like marketing that much. But anyway, what are you thinking for your like city logo or your city slogan? And apparently that wasn't on the radar yet, but I'm sure it will be. That's results reporting right there.
Just like in Grand Rapids, I think Grand Rapids should use Grand Rapids, it's in Minnesota, not Grand Rapids, it's in, you know, because we usually say it's in Minnesota's nature, but I think we should just say Grand Rapids, it's in Minnesota.
Right. Michigan.
I don't have anything.
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost it.
We just got a text in from Kim from Bemidji saying, at Bemidji State, the university in the Pines, it's been hard to see the damage. Earlier this summer, our alumni and facilities crew really stepped up to plant many, many new trees. There is hope for the future.
Thanks, Kim.
Yeah, for that Lori text. And I were at that event.
Thanks, Larissa. We'll be looking out for your the project you've been working a lot on, the incarceration project, and thanks for the update.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up, we're going to be checking in with Aaron Brown. We'll be talking about the summertime, these couple of weeks on the Iron Range, things going on, what's happening now, what's it's been like in the past, what were some of his favorite things to do as a kid. Any predictions there?
Is
he a ride guy?
No. I'm going to say no on that. A hard no. No Gravitron for Aaron? No. I think it's going to be something that we'll be surprised by, but also will make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
As soon as we hear. That's my guess. But that also ties into our question of the week, which is that we're wanting to know about small town events or festivals that you think everyone should experience at least once. Whether it's museums, parks, historic sites, ice cream shops, or parades, you can text us 218-326-1234.
We just heard from Steve saying he's with Shamika Copeland when she was at Riverfest, who said, hell yeah, Grand Rapids, right? Forget Michigan. yeah, and if you've ever had, I thought when the new slogan came out for Grand Rapids, I was sitting at a stoplight where I could only see part of the water tower, and I thought it was.
At Clocko, that's what it looks like.
Yeah. That's where I was sitting. And I was
missed opportunity, Grand Rapids.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've ever had your luggage go to Michigan, like I have.
Or an artist who is booked here and they realize the night before when they're in Indiana that they're supposed to be in Minnesota.
Yeah. Maybe we're putting it out there to the people that have a little fun with it, right?
Yeah. Be a little clever. We'd love to hear from you, be part of the conversation. You can text us 218-326-1234. We receive support